for the week and the day. It is Animal Rights Awareness Week, Carpenter Ant Awareness Week. Steve and Patrick were talking about critters last week on their show, Home Sweet Home. Who knows what they'll be talking about this week, but they were helping with the critters, including carpenter ants. Lightning Safety Week. Lou Christie, was playing. I'll play him in a little bit. Where lightning strikes. Old Time Fiddlers Week. Universal Fathers Week finishes up on the 25th. Meet a Mate Week started on the 20th. Watermelon Seed Spitting Week started on the 23rd. North American Organic Brewer Days. We'll be talking about the filling station and their upcoming schedule. So you can all get involved with organic brewers starting on July 1st. Water Ski Day starts tomorrow. Fisher Friends Not Food Week starts on the 26th, along with National Mosquito Control Awareness Week on the 26th. For today, it is International Fairy Day, Drive Your Corvette to Work Day, Take Your Dog to Work Day, in the Corvette, of course, and Celebration of the Senses. BrownieLocks.com, Celebration Observances for the week and the day. Pick something and get involved. Vitamin C comes from NJ.com. Craig Turpin reports on the 21st at Lambertville to become home to Music Mountain Theater. A new 265-seat auditorium being called Music Mountain Theater is expected to open later this year. Located at 1483 Route 179 in West Amwell Township, near the city border and adjacent to the site of the former Lambertville Music Circus, it will be home to Curtain Up Productions, which has changed its name from the Downtown Performing Arts Center. The announcement was made by producer and executive director Ginny Brennan during the group's performance of Little Women, the Broadway musical, on Saturday at the Washington Crossing Open Air Theater in Titusville, where it stages summer productions. Unlike the Music Circus, which was performed under a circus-style big-top tent, the new theater will be a 265-seat indoor venue with a traditional proscenium stage. Shows will be year-round and feature main stage Broadway revivals, plays, and a children's theater schedule, according to a news release. Additionally, the theater will be open for concerts and community events. The organization has operated for over 15 years at the Downtown Performing Arts Center and will be relocating to Mount Music Mountain Theater. The studio has grown in size and changed its location two times since its inception. According to the news release, the permanent home will allow for growth and for the studio to continue to provide classes in dance and acting to the area's youth. Fundraising has started with a variety of sponsorship and donor levels offered, including opportunities to purchase an engraved bronze star that will be embedded in the floor of the lobby, naming rights for areas within the theater, and a Name a Seat campaign that will allow patrons to purchase an engraved plaque that will be permanently affixed to a seat. Man, I'm so happy that Ms. Brennan found a home, because she was working diligently to try and get her studio on Main Street in Flemington. And she worked very hard to get the plans ready and work on that area right down the street from the Union Hotel. And it just didn't materialize, and it was really a shame, because it was going to be pretty darn good. But so she was looking for a home. And Main Street was looking for a home, but not apparently as motivated as they were to get a filling station in. But here we have Ginny finding a place to go, and they will now have a permanent home for these reviews and these revivals. And people will take advantage of it because they're starved for performances like this, and they're right down the road. So congratulations to them. Brings a smile to your face, but kind of a raspberry towards Flemington and the Flemington Council, because they couldn't get it done in Flemington to help their own borough. Vitamin C for today. It's June 24th, 2016. Here are the birthdays from the old disc jockey almanac. Start off with Coy Stewart, 18, from Are We There Yet? Fantastic Four's Nicole Munoz is 22. The Kings of Summer, Aaron Moriarty is 22. Station Agent, Raven Goodwin, 24. Nick and Noah's Infinite Playlist, Rafi Gavrin, 27. Caitlin Cullum is 30 from Grace Under Fire. From Paris with Love, Amber Rose Riva is 30. Singer of I Decided, Solange Knowles is 30. Actress, The Fault of Our Stars, Lottie Vierbeck is 34. Or Lottie Vierbeck. Actress of Hansel and Gretel, Joanna Kulig is 34. The Expendables 3, Sarai Gavati is 34. Blue Bloods, Vanessa Ray is 35. Never Back Down, Toki Jones is 35. Friday Night Lights, Minka Kelly is 36. The Trotsky, Leanne Balaban is 36. The Office, Mindy Kaling is 37. Television Personality, Petra Mamkolova is 37. I Can't Think Straight, Shatil Sheath is 40. Neighbors, Carla Gallo is 41. From The Dark Knight, Charles Venn is 43. Singer of She Ain't Worth It, Glenn Menderos is 46. Sherry Stringfield is 49 from ER. Danielle Spencer is 51 from As Good As It Gets. Game of Thrones, Ian Glenn is 55. Pro golfer Jim Carter, 55. The Fifth Element, Tommy Tiny Lister is 58. Jake and the Fat Man, Joe Penny is 60. Michael Reed McKay is 63 from 7. Actress in Boy Meets World, Betsy Randall, 66. RoboCop's Nancy Allen, 66. RoboCop Peter Weller is 69. Mick Fleetwood, founder of Fleetwood Mac, is 69 today. Zombies, Colin Bloomstone is 71. The Yardbirds, Jeff Beck Group, Jeff Beck is 72. Singer of Fire, Arthur Brown is 73. George Stanford Brown is 73 as well. Michelle Lee sang L. David Sloan from 74. And writer-director of Putney Swoop, Robert Downey Sr. is 81. Those are our celebrity birthdays. If you'd like to get your birthday celebration or anniversary on the air, email me at goodmorning@huntingtonshipyard.com and I'll get it on the show to celebrate. All right, we'll be right back with Michelle Heidi on the line. Hang on. We've got to talk about Brexit.
Hunterdon, this is Big C coming to you from HuntertonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good Morning Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Well, good afternoon. Friday the 24th of June. Can't believe we're into the last week in June. And next weekend, of course, will be the 4th of July. And I'm sure lots of people are looking forward to that long holiday. And many people would be starting on Friday and, you know, coming back on Tuesday. So let's hope we have good weather. But at least we can talk about the weather this week. And today has been mostly sunny. High of about 84 degrees tonight. Although it's supposed to be partly cloudy, we should have very nice sleeping weather. About 58 degrees, 60 degrees, you know, open the windows and, you know, turn on any fans and, you know, have a good night's sleep without the air conditioning. I never like air conditioning anyway to sleep. So what's the weekend? Well, the weekend tomorrow looks like the best day. Sunny, about 83 degrees, and should really be nice. Northwest winds, maybe 5 miles an hour. But becoming calm in the morning, and by Sunday night there's going to be some patchy fog, but that's really going to be, you know, really when I say Saturday night, it's really early into Sunday morning, because it's mostly clear, and then there will be patchy fog, and at this time of year you really have to be careful, because especially the fawns are not used to cars, and you know, it can be a real problem, because they're very hard to see, especially if they, you know, just scamper out in front of you in the road. You know, I guess I'm one of those people who've had a number of deer accidents. Not my fault, always the deer. But they can do a lot of damage, and, you know, we don't need that if we don't have to. So how about Sunday? Sunday, again, as I said, patchy fog. And then sunny in the afternoon, again about 83 degrees, so it should be really nice. And into Monday, another nice, mostly sunny day. So it's really going to be a very nice weekend, not too unbearably hot. We're very lucky we don't have the heat that they're experiencing in some parts of the country. And so that's the weather, and I'll be back with It's the Law right after a couple announcements from our sponsors.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program, no drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
Well, good afternoon. I'm Pat Smits, the host of It's the Law. Those of you who know me know that I practice family law. In fact, my practice is exclusively family law related matters, but I try to bring everybody up to date on what's happening in the news with respect to legal news. So there's a case that came out. It was approved for publication, and it has to do with entertainment and sports law. I suppose I should wait for the sports guys, but I am also interested in anything dealing with sports. But this is a rather unique, very unique case, and it's called Davidovich versus the Israel Ice Skating Federation, and it was a case decided in the appellate division, and it's been a published case. So the in this situation, the plaintiff, and that means the person who brought the lawsuit, is a teenage ice skater of dual United States-Israeli citizenship. And so she filed a complaint in the law division, that means the trial court that would hear this type of case, and she was seeking to break free from the Israeli Ice Skating Federation, and she had represented the federation in the pairs event in the 2014 Winter Olympics. So what happened is her Israeli skating partner severed their relationship shortly after the Olympics. And so she now wishes, the plaintiff now wishes, since she does no longer have that partner, wishes to compete internationally for the United States. So what's the problem? Well, under the rules of the International Skating Unit, the International Skating Union, called the ISU, she cannot skate for the United States without obtaining a release from the Israeli Federation. And the Israeli Federation declined to grant her such an unconditional release, contending that doing so will detrimentally encourage other skaters in whom it has invested substantial resources to switch their affiliations to other countries. So this is, you know, they have a legitimate beef, I guess you would say, because they're saying that they spent a lot of money on their athletes and that many of them might likely have dual citizenship, and that if, in fact, this is allowed, this would encourage athletes who they've spent a lot of money and time and training on switching to other countries. So what happened in this case is the trial court granted partial summary judgment to the plaintiff. And that means that without a trial, the trial judge ordered certain things. And what the trial judge did was order the federation to issue a release over its objection. And so what, because this case was not finalized, in other words, not a final trial and a final hearing on all issues, one way to get the appellate courts to look at things, not one way, the way to get an appellate court to review what a trial judge does is to file a motion for leave to appeal. And that's what happened in this case. The appellate division granted leave to appeal to the defendants, the Israel Ice Skating Federation. And the appellate division reversed the trial court's summary judgment ruling and vacated the court-ordered release. And the reason they did that is that the strong general policies disfavoring judicial interference into internal affairs of sporting organizations, that was the first reason. Second, the need for possible non-judicial remedies to be exhausted with the ISU, in other words, the International Skating Union, they thought there might be non-judicial remedies that should be dealt with first. And then three, the presence of a genuine disputed issue or issues of material fact and business justification. So that that's the reasons why they reversed. However, they affirmed the trial court's denial of summary judgment to both sides on a separate count of the complaint alleging the defendant's tortuous interference with the plaintiff's prospective economic opportunities. So they, in other words, they did agree that the trial judge should deny both sides had asked for summary judgment on that specific issue as fair, whether or not there was interference by the defendants on the plaintiff's economic opportunities. Interesting case, and I'm not surprised that the, well, I am surprised to some extent that the appellate division decided to take the case because they rarely will grant leave to appeal. However, certainly in this case, if they did not grant leave to appeal and make a decision at this juncture of the case, there would have been irreparable harm in the long run the defendants, the Federation, would say that there was irreparable harm if, in fact, the plaintiff was allowed to skate for the United States without a final decision. So that was, as I said, that was a little different. We don't usually get cases like that. There was another a Capital Health Care System case, which was again published, meaning that it is precedent. Capital Health System versus Horizon Healthcare Services, and this is also an appellate case. And in fact, there were two appeals that were related to an opinion that they that the court issued on June 7th, and that was the Capital Health Systems versus the Department of Banking. And in that case, they affirmed the Department of Banking and Insurance decision approving Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, their application to establish the Omnia Health Alliance, that's O-M-N-I-A, Omnia Health Alliance Network. And in that case, several of the hospitals brought actions in the Chancery Division against Horizon. And the hospitals alleged that the insurer breached its contracts with them by, among other things, not including them as Tier 1 hospitals in this new network. And as I think I've reported, well, I did report on this case, the trial courts granted the hospital's request for discovery of a consultant's report Horizon used to select and tier the hospitals for the network, contracts between Horizon and these hospitals, and other proprietary business information concerning the formation of the network. Now, in their earlier decision, the court considered the relevancy of this material to the hospital's claims and then balanced it against Horizon's need to maintain the confidentiality of the material, which, if disclosed, could give the plaintiffs a competitive advantage over other hospitals in each of their service areas and, in fact, over the insurer in future negotiations concerning rates. So, as a result of this balancing, the appellate division ordered specific redactions be made to the material sought by the hospitals. In other words, they were going to get some of these, some of this information, some of these documents, but certain portions were going to be able to be redacted, meaning blocked out. You know, redacted generally means you take the black pen and cross out anything, I guess I should say black marker, and cross out anything that you don't have to disclose. So that is, you know, that was another published case by the approved for publication by the appellate division this week. There is a Supreme Court case on legal ethics, and it just had to do with law firms maintaining malpractice insurance, and what the court said it did not extend to the firm's wind-up period when the law firm has ceased performing legal services. And it also does not require the purchase of what we call tail insurance. Now, this is the rule of, you know, it's an ethical rule and what lawyers must do. So, in addition, they said the violation of this rule does not result in automatic conversion of a law firm organized as an LLP to a general practice. So, basically, and as a result of all of this, mortgage grader had no vicarious liability claim against the firm. So that, as I said, that was probably of little interest to most people other than lawyers who are closing out their firms, whether or not they have to continue insurance. Doesn't mean that it's not a good idea, but that they don't have to. There was another tax case, Farmland Dairies versus the Borough of Wallington, and Farmland Dairies timely appealed the borough's alleged overassessment of its property for certain years in question. And then the movement moved to intervene with the intention to file a complaint alleging that plaintiff's property was underassessed. And the movement's motion was filed after the statute of limitations for such claims as set forth in the statute. So, in other words, they filed a motion after the statute of limitations, which means the time in which you can file a lawsuit. So the trial court, denied the movement's motion to intervene, finding that while the movement had standing to bring the claim, the failure to bring the claim within the applicable statute of limitations, either by filing complaints or by way of motion to intervene, was a fatal jurisdictional flaw. In other words, this had nothing to do with the substance. It had to do with procedure. And procedure is you have to bring these suits within a certain period of time, and they didn't do it. And so that the attempt to intervene was not an amendment to timely filed pleadings and alleged a new cause of action. So as a result, the complaint did not relate back to the date of the filing of the original complaint. Now, why is this important? Well, it's important because you can't sit on your rights. And if you think you have a reason or a claim, it's important that you contact an attorney so that you don't wait too long. And that's basically what happened here. They waited too long. So the tax thing's going on, I guess, because there's another opinion. Again, these opinions came out yesterday. So another tax case came out yesterday, and that had to do with Savage Mills Enterprises versus the Borough of Little Silver. And again, it was a tax issue. So in this case, the plaintiff, Savage Mills, filed a complaint challenging the 2015 assessment upon the property it owns in the Borough of Little Silver. And they included as a separate count a claim for partial exemption because a portion of the property was occupied by a nonprofit charitable entity which owned the building on the property and actually used it for entirely charitable purposes and was a ground lessee under a 99-year renewable lease. Kind of a mess for those of us who don't handle that type of case, and that's why there are, in fact, attorneys who really specialize or handle these kinds of cases. And one of the things I always tell people is you need to get the right attorney depending on the type of case you're filing. So in this case, the defendant, Borough of Little Silver, moved to dismiss the complaint on grounds that the court itself lacked subject matter jurisdiction to rule on a contract issue, since the 99-year lease agreement required plaintiff to pay any and all taxes on the portion of the subject property owned and occupied by the nonprofit entity. And, of course, in this case, the plaintiff cross-moved, and the court ruled that the plaintiff, as property owner in fee, has standing to assert a claim for partial exemption as part of its challenge to the subject property's assessment. And they cited a statute, of course. However, standing to claim exemption does not provide entitlement to the exemption. So, again, this is procedural. They had the right to file the claim, meaning the standing to file the claim. They weren't thrown out because they had no interest, specific interest, but that didn't provide entitlement to the exemption. So the court found to obtain partial exemption, the claimant must satisfy all the requirements of the exemption statute. And the exemption statute in this case is NJSA 54:4-3.6. And in this case, the plaintiff, Savage Mills, failed to meet the statutory requisites, and therefore the court denied defendant's summary judgment motion in part, granted plaintiff's cross motion in part as to the standing to claim the exemption, and then granted the defendant's summary judgment motion in part and denied plaintiff's cross motion in part as to plaintiff's entitlement to and grant of a partial exemption. Believe me, if I had to deal with cases like this all day long, I'm sure I would have retired years ago. But there are those, certainly those people out there that do. What else is happening in the legal news? Well, in the legal news, the U.S. bankruptcy court judge has ruled that United States Senator Cory Booker, the most recent senator elected from New Jersey, is immune from claims that he failed to properly supervise a corruption-ridden water agency while serving as mayor of Newark. So apparently somebody was making that claim that he should be held responsible for what I understand is a huge, huge, just a corruption-riddled water agency that, you know, doesn't help New Jersey when we always have these kinds of cases and everybody believes that we're run by a criminal element, put it that way. I was glad to see that the legislature has, although these judges have been subject to some controversy, the legislature approved them and also approved a new judge. So they were approved for tenure, and these were two judges, and apparently whatever the – and I don't recall. I did know what the problem is. I don't even recall what it was at this point. But they were approved for tenure, and a new – another judge was, in fact, also appointed, which is good. What else? Seems to be a lot of lawyers moving from one firm to another. That was one of the things that, you know, judges, probably not judges, but certainly attorneys always look at. And so there were one of the largest firms in Long Island is absorbing 14 attorneys from a New Jersey firm. So they now will have 151 lawyer attorney regional firm. So that it's not often that that happens where that number of attorneys will move to a firm that's really a what we consider a non-New Jersey firm. Let's see. Well, the attorney, there's a firm in Red Bank. Well, some of them are moving to another firm in Newark, so I don't think much is – that's not very interesting. But an attorney representing a Philadelphia firefighter whose photograph appeared with a New York Daily News article about sex scandals that he had nothing to do with said his client would not have known about the article if, except for people contacting his client thinking he was involved in the scandal. So the, you know, that supports his claim that obviously, you know, based on the reporting, people got it wrong. And I guess that would be pretty, you know, that we can be blamed for a lot of things. So we can have our name in the newspaper or our picture in the newspaper. But most of us would put, you know, being accused of being as part and part of a sex scandal right up at the top there, maybe along with being accused of murder, rape, or some other serious crime. So again, approved for publication. This was the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said that a trial court erred when it barred the testimony of a witness who claimed that her superiors instructed her to lie to the person investigating sexual harassment claims because the testimony was relevant to plaintiff's claims for compensatory and punitive damages arising from a hostile work environment. Sexual harassment is satisfied, arising from a hostile work environment, and they said it satisfied an exception to the hearsay rule and its relevance was not substantially outweighed by the risk of undue prejudice. So what the Supreme Court did when the case got up to the Supreme Court said that the trial court should not have barred this testimony. So let me play a couple spots, and we'll be back with more news.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325.
You've got a friend.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunting Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunting Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325.
You've got a friend.
Okay, we're back. I'm Pat Smith, the program It's the Law. Today's June 24th, unless this is being replayed, which I don't think it will be. But in any event, we're talking about some of the cases and legal news. And one of the cases that might be of interest, but certainly points out why it's important to know about the statute of limitations. And as I've explained, the statute of limitations means that you must bring a lawsuit within a certain period of time. It may be a certain number of years. Well, it's usually a certain number of years. But if you fail to do that, then you cannot later. Other than there's certainly some exceptions to that, but ordinarily you can't expect to be able to bring a lawsuit if it's after the time period permitted by statute. So what is this? This is another case from the appellate division. The author is Judge Lijos, and she's an excellent jurist. She really is. I'm always glad when she handles the family law cases that go up on appeal. And not that other judges are not excellent, but it always seems to me that she gets it. So what about this time? Well, this was a medical negligence matter. And so the appellate division had to examine whether the plaintiff, the person who's suing, met the requirements of a court rule. And the rule is 4:26-4, and that's what we call the fictitious party pleading rule. Now, the plaintiff in this case was named Worthy, and the lawsuit was against Kennedy Health System. So they wanted to, examine whether she met the requirements of the rule, because if she did, that would save her claims from being dismissed as untimely. So, in other words, beyond the statute of limitations. So apparently she consulted with an attorney less than 2 months prior to the expiration of the statute of limitations. So in other words, she consulted with an attorney, maybe the first time she consulted with an attorney, only 2 months before the statute of limitations. Not the way to do it. If you think you have a lawsuit, you should consult with an attorney right away. So the complaint was filed in time. So that's interesting. In this case, it was filed in time. However, in which the illegible signatures and professional designations of unidentified defendants as taken from hospital treatment records were used in lieu of typed names. So in other words, in this case, they just used the signatures. You couldn't tell who it was. The signatures were placed in the caption and included in the complaint specific allegations of negligence. Now then, the attorney's post-complaint efforts to identify all defendants included correspondence, telephone calls, motions for enforcement, special interrogatories, and depositions. Now, in this case, the hospital did not identify those professionals for approximately 15 months after the complaint was filed. So remember, in this case, the complaint was timely. The people that they were trying to sue were not identified until approximately 15 months after the complaint was sued. So, now, what happened and why this went up on appeal is the trial judge dismissed the complaint, finding identification efforts prior to its filing were insufficient. Okay, so that the trial judge said this attorney should have done more before filing the complaint. Now, how did the appellate division decide? Well, they reversed it. They reversed the trial judge's decision. And they found that not only must the court consider all the facts and the circumstances, but also must determine whether the defendant suffered prejudice from any delay, which resulted from the hospital's lapses, not the plaintiff's. So ordinarily, the concern is if somebody doesn't file timely, file within the time permitted by statute, you know, records are lost, people don't remember, there's no expectation that you're going to even have to keep records, and so it's an unfair burden on somebody who might be sued to think that maybe they'll be sued sometime in the future and have to keep all records. But in this case, the prejudice was from the hospital's lapses, not the plaintiff's. They also reviewed, meaning the appellate division also reviewed facts supporting causation regarding another defendant who argued despite his alleged failure to diagnose and treat plaintiff's condition, she would not have experienced a better outcome. So the appellate division said, concluding that the judge failed to apply the proper legal standard, they reversed. And so that, they not overruling the judge who heard a trial and made a decision. Again, this is a procedural, really procedural. And they reversed and said that the judge failed to apply the proper legal standard in this particular case. So there's some people who are pretty happy about, after 4 years of litigation in both the federal court in New York and bankruptcy court in New Jersey, a group of immigrants who formerly worked at car washes in both states received a final portion of a $1.65 million settlement for unpaid wages. So in other words, I don't know anything about the case, but obviously, it was a substantial case if they were paid that much money. We don't even know how many were involved, but at least, that suit can't not pay people. And it's very important for small businesses to understand, you know, that not only do they have to pay people, they have to pay workman's comp, they have to, you know, just a lot of things people have to do when they're a business owner. So there's, sometimes you really wonder, because this case was Wedgwood Knolls Condo Association versus Hassan. And in this case, the plaintiff appealed from a final judgment awarding the plaintiff $1,630, but denying its request for counsel fees. So the plaintiff had sought outstanding maintenance fees and other related charges that defendant, who was a unit owner at this condo association, owed, and they said it was totaling $3,015.32. Now the appellate division, so this went through the trial court and then there was an appeal. The appellate division affirmed the judgment as to the claim for maintenance fees. And they did that, maintenance fees and related condominium charges, basically on the reasons that the trial judge has set. However, they reversed the denial of attorney's fees, and they found that the judge's reliance on the limited amount of plaintiff's recovery alone did not satisfy the court's obligation to consider all relevant factors after an application was properly submitted. So the appellate division remanded this case to the trial court for a determination of whether reasonable attorney's fees, as provided by the Condominium Act and plaintiff's master deed, were warranted. And after considering properly submitted affidavit of services and any opposition from the defendant. In other words, what happens in cases like this is you can't just go in and say, hey, I'm owed $10,000. You have to file an affidavit of services that complies with the court rules, and then the other side is entitled to file an opposition. And in this case, that's basically what they're being told. So there's, again, now there's some dispute resolution, arbitration, employment litigation. Essex County College. Their petitioner in that case, Timothy Wilson, appealed a final administrative decision of the, I'll say it because you're not going to understand it otherwise, Public Employment Relations Commission, PERC, P-E-R-C, and they dismissed the request for special disciplinary arbitration. They didn't even want the hearing, so they objected to a hearing, and so they... Now, I think I have this mixed up with another case. The Timothy Wilson, in this case, appealed from a final determination dismissing his request for special disciplinary arbitration. That's what he wanted. He wanted to appear before a special disciplinary arbitration panel. And that's how this case came up. So we can talk about it a bit more after I play a couple spots because we don't want to get too far behind.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon
Honerdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Honerdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Honerdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.honerdonhealthcare.org.
Okay, we're back. It's the law. I'm Pat Smits, and I was talking to you about a case in the matter of Essex County College. And so let's kind of redo that, because I think I may have missed a couple words and would have given you the wrong impression. So in this case, the petitioner, and that's what they call it in these situations. So the petitioner, Timothy Wilson, was employed at Essex County College. So what he did is there was a final administrative decision of the Public Employment Relations Commission, or PERC, dismissing Wilson's request for a special disciplinary arbitration panel hearing following his termination from employment at Essex County College. Now, the director, and I want to be sure that this is still the same director now. I'm not that sure. So in any event, what happened is the director of conciliation and arbitration agreed with Essex County College that Wilson did not qualify for a permanent full-time, So anyway, he did not qualify as a permanent full-time member since he had not completed his probationary period of employment. So the decision to deny arbitration was premised upon two factors. First, that the CBA excluded medical leave time from probationary periods. And second, that the evidence was sufficient to show that Wilson failed to communicate his probationary period before being terminated. So that's the issue. If he had been terminated by his employer before that, that would have been one thing. So, I mean, I think that if anyone is interested in that case, let's read it, because it really is a case that... case that not a lot of people are going to understand. So let me come back, talk about a couple other cases before we have to take a break, but we will take a short break now.
Hi, this is Ruth Ann Disatel, celebrant officiant with Celebration of a Lifetime. When people ask me why I joined the chamber, it's because I want to get to know you and what you're all about, and I want you to get to know me and what I'm all about. And together, I'd like to celebrate what we can do for Honerdon County.
Honerdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Hi, we're back. It's the law, and a few more minutes, but there was some employment litigation that was in the news that might be of interest to certain employers and employees, certainly. But in this case... Appellant Jaime Cohen appealed from a final decision of the Board of Review that found that she had not filed a timely appeal challenging the denial of her claim for unemployment compensation benefits, and she had failed to establish good cause for the untimely appeal. Okay, so this was a decision, a final decision from the Board of Review as I said, they'd found she had not filed a timely appeal challenging the denial of her claim for unemployment compensation benefits, and that she failed to establish good cause for the untimely appeal. And she had been employed by Dolce Vita Intimates between October of 2013 to March of 2014, when she tendered a resignation letter to the employer, claiming that she had been mistreated by management. She claimed that the mistreatment negatively affected her physical and emotional health, and, as she was pregnant at the time, that of her unborn child. Now, she filed a claim for unemployment compensation benefits after she resigned. And then in May of 2014, a deputy of the Division of Unemployment and Disability Insurance mailed her a notice of determination stating that she was disqualified for benefits because she had voluntarily left her job. And for the next, what happened then, of course, because, you know, I'm aware of where this was going on, there was a notice of determination that she was disqualified for benefits because she had voluntarily left her job. And then on the appeal, the appellant asserted that she was unable to timely effect an appeal because of the deputy's determination, because it became emotional, caused emotional distress. She just wasn't able to do with it. So, excuse me, not do with it, deal with it. So then on the first time, she voluntarily left if you sign a letter of resignation, depending if you have any basis. So apparently when she filed the appeal, then she submitted a letter from a licensed clinical social worker who opined that the appellant was a compromised, and sorry, the plaintiff was in a compromised mental state. And so she failed, however, to mail her appeal. She failed to do certain other things. During the hearing, she never attributed the late filing to emotional stress or de-stress. She missed deadline, although she believed it was just because she wanted to collect her thoughts and put together a nice letter. Didn't go. Now, this one is, you know, forget it. If you have a claim, you have to bring it quickly. And this is not something that this lady did. So what else is, New Jersey Supreme Court has warned employers not to retaliate against their workers because they are separated or contemplating a divorce, even if the breakup turns out ugly. So I think this is a very important step forward, certainly for women. I just don't even know what to say other than I think it's an important decision, and employers can't retaliate. If you have three employees, you better figure out how you're going to, you know, get them to work and all work together and yet be autonomous. So that's... So that workplace retaliation for filing a divorce will be very, I have not read that case, but I'll be interested to read that. The Northeast gets the mudslinging because on Tuesday... So what other things were approved for publication? Well, I'll tell you as soon as we get back from this short break.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Okay, we're back. There was a earlier this week, or maybe a week ago, criminal law, and of course any of you who are listening who are really interested in criminal law, I hope it's not because you're a criminal, but in any event, in State versus Jones, again, it was an appellate division case, and the defendant's post-conviction relief petition asserting his attorney.